Hey, everybody, it's Box Brawl Radio, episode 153. I am Griffin Hoffman, and with me is Jeff Brewer.
Hey there, Griff.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
You having a happy, flappy Easter?
A hoppy Easter.
Oh, snap. You're dropping the funny ones early.
You know it. Yeah, boom.
Don't blow that comedic load all at once.
Put that in your basket and stuff it with green grass.
Do you like eggs? Well, how do you like them eggs?
Oh, yes. The classic Matt Damon line from... Who's the man now? Dog.
You did it. You did it great.
Well, this is a podcast where we talk about video games occasionally, or I should say this is an occasional podcast where we talk about video games.
I would say exclusively, but I think some other stuff creeps in there from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to say Sean Cannery for some reason. Can we make a joke about canneries and Sean Cannery?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Yep.
I'm Sean Chicanery.
Is that right. The name of your weapon in Bloodborne?
Yes, I am using the Sean Chicanery. That is hard to say. That's
Sean,
like a
Chicanery.
Right,
the Sean Chicanery Redemption.
Sean Connery.
Sean Shawshank. Sean Chicanery Redemption.
How about that Bloodborne?
Well, it's pretty good.
That's a game. Were we playing that game the last time we did this podcast? I don't really remember.
Nope.
We're like semi-annual now for the podcast?
Bi-monthly? Is that? Or is it bi-weekly? Bi-weekly, right?
Yeah, sure.
Every 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I think that's a good commitment.
Yeah. I think more of a quarterly installment. Let's just go the Eggum route.
Once a blood moon. How about that?
How about every fortnight, just because Fortnite is a cool thing to do?
Yeah, Fortnite's a good way to go. Yeah.
Alright.
Speaking of Fortnite, is that ever gonna come out?
I don't even remember what that is, other than the fact that it's spelled NITE instead of NIGHT.
Mm-hmm. Unreal Engine 4, the only thing ever being made for the Unreal Engine 4.
Is it called Fortnite? F-O-U-R?
Yep, from your friends at the Fast and Furious franchise comes Fortnite.
Hey, you joke it about Fast and Furious, but I'm really excited to watch that movie.
Yeah, me too. Once it comes to video.
It's going to be so bad, but so good.
I can't wait.
I've already seen The Rock sitting in a hospital bed with like little electrodes like kind of like strapped to his chest, like in the wrong place.
Yep. And but then he just flexes his cast off.
You can see his nice little nipples, though. So I'm into it.
Good. Yeah.
He's down but not out. I'm guessing he'll save them in the 11th hour.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, that's pretty exciting.
Well,
anyway, though.
We were talking about some Bloodborne because that game came out.
It did come out. And we haven't talked about it at all yet, right?
No. Well, I mean, moments ago we did, but then we pulled back. We teased it, and now we're here again. Bloodborne.
So, what do you think of that game, Griff?
I think it's pretty good. It's a pretty awesome game. First of all, way easier than the previous Bloodborne games.
Than the previous Bloodborne games?
Yeah, like Dark Souls
Easiest
1 and
Bloodborne
2.
Bloodborne game I've played.
Oh my god, it's a walk
At
in the park.
At times it's the hardest Bloodborne game I've played too, though.
Yeah. I actually do think that it is more approachable and easier than Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2.
I mean, it's definitely simpler in terms of like not having weird kind of obscure stats that... Mm-hmm. I mean, there are obscure stats, but there are less of them.
Yeah, and it feels like it doesn't matter nearly as much as before.
I guess so. I don't really remember how much stats used to matter. Like, I feel like they probably didn't matter there either because people would do like level 1 builds where they could do like 1,000 damage in one attack.
Yeah, but you're not having to deal with like poise where you're like, is this actually affecting me? Is it not? I don't know.
Now the poise just comes from your own inner confidence and not an actual stat.
I'm leveling up as a player, not as an avatar.
Do you wear poise when you play the game?
I only actually listen to Poison by Belle Biv DeVoe.
Do you strike a poise?
Nope, just Vogue. Okay. Just Vogue.
All right. But yeah, no, I would agree with that. It definitely seems to be... I don't know. It's kind of kicking my ass a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
just because and I think I've kind of mentioned this to you a few times, like I haven't really had the time I need to have to like do this whole thing of just like repeatedly doing something until I kind of get into the groove.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it hasn't seemed any easier than previous Souls games. I feel like I have more experience with Souls under my belt, so like some of the trash mobs aren't quite as daunting as they used to be, but it doesn't seem significantly easier to me. I mean, what makes it feel easier to you, Griffin?
I think it just suits my playstyle better, where my preferred method is to like rush in and play aggressively. And
gotcha.
And like I felt like in Dark Souls 2, when I spent a lot of time in that, I kind of fell into a rut of like hiding behind a shield, being very meticulous, and then when you do kind of get overconfident, you get stomped on pretty quickly because there's no way to recover from it. In Bloodborne, with the invulnerability frames in your dash, like the roll the roll, both one and the same, it just seems like I'm able to get in, do some damage, and if I get caught or hit, like I can just continue to slash away and still recover. And with that regenerating like Street Fighter 4 style health, you take a hit, you can still regen some health back.
Steal it back, yeah.
Yeah, that makes things you end up surviving a lot of more encounters than I would have in Dark Souls.
I suppose that's true. I've had kind of a weird experience with the regain system where I just kind of like, I don't know, I keep trying to utilize it really effectively, and I'll have moments where I'm like, yeah, I'm getting it. And then other moments where I'm like, I'm trying to go all in and like I just get destroyed because like an enemy does like a double hit on me, and then I'm like, oh, I could regain the quarter of my health that I still have, but what's the point? You know, like I'll still get killed by one hit afterwards. Hmm. And it's weird because like I always was a very dodgy Dark Souls player, and I don't know if it's just that like the enemy movements feel a little bit more erratic this time around. And that could just be a function of not being able to like really dig in and study windups and stuff. Mm-hmm. But like it's kicking my ass a little bit more than it used to. And I don't know. It's weird because I think most people agree with you, Griff, but I haven't felt like it's any easier than any other Souls title, really. Feels about the same to me. I will say parrying seems maybe a little easier.
Okay. Still not a strong point for me.
Maybe just because you're forced. Well, for me, I feel like I'm forced to do it. Like, I feel like that's the way I have to play. And in that way, I'm like really reckless because I'll walk up to a dude and like have him start to collapse on me and then try to parry him. But I think my problem is just that I'm still really much in like a Dark Souls mentality. Like I don't think I've internalized some of the changes. Like I was kind of fiddling around with the Kirkhammer weapon, which I guess is kind of like one of the greatest weapons.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, like this weapon is so interesting. Like it's so much different than Souls because like it actually matters if you combo. Like transforming has an effect. Like I don't know, I'm sure you've discovered this combo, Griff, where like you can stun lock with the sword with the first hit and then immediately transform. And like you can't do stuff like that in Dark Souls. And like I'm starting to like get the hang of it. And like I noticed that like when you have the hammer out and you swing, you have enough poise then that you don't get knocked over if someone attacks you. So you can actually take advantage. No. You can actually take advantage of regain more easily with the hammer. I'm kind of starting to get the hang of it. And like I've had these moments where like I'm like going through the first world and I'm grinding and like those giant dudes with the bricks.
Yes.
Like I'll do a charge attack with the hammer and right when he gets there, I'll smash him and kill him in one hit.
Yeah, that's really satisfying. When the Kirkhammer is. It might be the most approachable weapon in the game simply because anecdotally I gave Jen the controller and I had the Kirkhammer on and she had it in the hammer mode.
When you had the Kirkhammer?
What's that?
Were you fireproof when you had the Kirkhammer?
Yeah.
did you teach her the way of the master?
she picked that Kirkhammer up right away and just immediately killed two brick dudes back to back and then ran through the first area of the map pretty quickly without really taking any damage just by mashing on the hammer button.
So you're telling me there weren't any growing pains?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, sorry.
You monster.
I had to get it out.
You're the last boss.
Yeah, that's really interesting that Jen, who has never played a Souls game, was able to just kind of dive in with the Kirkhammer. I feel like I've just been doing it wrong because I've just been using the cane the whole time.
Well, and kind of the thing that I've really started to appreciate is You know, one of the things that ticked me off most in video games is when rules apply to you and not to enemies. So in this game, one thing that really ticks me off is how come other monsters don't get hit by other monsters' weapons? That chooses me off. But not going to win that battle.
Sometimes they do, though. Like the spoiler guy in Old Yharnam can kill monsters. I think he actually blows stuff up to kill monsters.
That's the only way.
Okay.
But... So for example, one of the things that frustrated me was like, okay, you have a big guy, and a big guy can essentially like he can shrug off a stun from a hit. Like you're not going to stun him.
Not easily anyway.
Yeah, like not a regular hit is going to put stun. You're not going to stun lock him with a regular hit. But one of the things that I found that was really cool is when I have the Kirk hammer, I'll switch from the sword to the hammer, and now I can just knock a guy to the ground and continue to hit him when he's on the ground and kill him.
Yeah.
Like that is the equivalency that I enjoy.
Something that I find interesting about the weapons actually in this game is that there seem to be these rules that are kind of difficult to suss out on your own of like ways that you can actually create riposte opportunities without parrying.
Yeah.
Like it seems like if you use the hammer, you can actually stagger someone without either sneaking up behind them or like parrying them.
I've not encountered that.
It seems to be a thing. I've had it come up a couple times, not often, but it does come up.
Nice. Like with the stagger, do you mean stagger enough to get in to do a visceral, or are
exactly
you...
okay. like an actual visceral stagger? Which is really interesting. I want to explore that further, but it seems pretty cool. It's also interesting how you have to, when you sneak up on enemies, you can't just backstab them anywhere. You have to charge an attack.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other dimension that we haven't even touched on, which is this concept of like actually charging your attacks, which replaces the kind of like special attack that different weapons have.
Or the kind of, you know, you would have the light and the heavy would just be typically a more damaging attack.
Yeah, well, it'd be like a sweeping attack usually, or like with a big weapon, it'd be like a charge attack.
Right.
And it would cost a lot of durability, I remember. Like it would cost like 10 weapon durability to use it. But and now it's just like, yeah, go ahead.
No, you're on it.
I was going to say, now it's just like you're expected to like integrate these kind of charging attacks into your repertoire.
Yep.
And I know I need to buff my stamina because a lot of them just cost way too much stamina for me to use them regularly, but they seem to have a lot of interesting potential. And like I mentioned before, like charging up the Kirk hammer to just one shot one of those giant brick dudes was super, super satisfying. And it's definitely something different than what I've seen with Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but it's not with the speed that you're allowed in Bloodborne, it becomes like a lot more manageable, especially for somebody like me who's not very deft at these kind of games. I can still like roll in, set up for a big, heavy, fully charged hit, and then have enough stamina to roll out of the way, charge, and then do the same thing twice and just rinse, repeat.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's definitely... I think I need to just move beyond the cane, because the cane, it doesn't have the best range. It doesn't have the best... I mean, it's relatively quick, but it's not... The charge attack isn't super amazing. Like, I want to, like, start incorporating, like, the rifle spear, which has a nice...
You're saying that cane's it's a little bit too much of a crutch for you? It's kind of handicapping you?
Yeah, I feel like when I use it, I only have one leg to stand on.
Oh.
I don't have any leg to stand on. There you go. But yeah, no, I think I need to just kind of expand my horizons a bit, because I think charge attacks with like the rifle spear, for example, probably seem like they'd be really good because you go really far. Mm-hmm. Like so many times I'll roll out of the way, charge up, and then I'll just whiff air.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if only my cane were a little bit longer, I would be poking this guy right now.
Story of my life. Somebody actually said that same thing to me when I was at the YMCA last week.
Was that when you were chilling in the sauna?
Yeah, I was. Yep.
Yeah, that's where most of my
standard conversation.
Yeah, most of my charge attack cane poking experiences go on there. But yeah, I was going to say the combat almost—it kind of reminds me of like Monster Hunter style combat a little bit.
Yes,
I don't know. Do you get that vibe? Yeah, you do. Okay,
more so than previous Dark Souls games, and I think that's because of the transformations. So what really separates Bloodborne from Dark Souls is, you know, you have your, for example, we've been talking about the cane quite a bit, and your cane is going to be like essentially a short sword, and then if you press the L1 button, you will trick your weapon out
Pimp my weapon.
Yes, you'll pimp your cane into a gigantic Soul Calibur style Ivy whip.
Which is actually pretty cool, I will say.
It's super cool, like both in animation and in the versatility that it provides in a single weapon.
Yeah.
So your cane, which was then a short sword, now has like triple the range, does significantly less damage.
It does slightly more, actually. Well, for me,
wait,
anyway.
Really?
If it's a different kind of damage, so.
Oh.
I think, anyway.
Oh, is it more dex-based or something?
I think it's like slashing damage or something versus thrusting. I don't really know. I have a hard time keeping up with that.
And then you also get a pretty sizable sweeping attack with it that lets you crowd control a little better.
Its big weakness is that it has a pretty lengthy wind-up.
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, it's definitely great for crowd. Like if you're fighting like four enemies at once, it's pretty good to have that thing out just to kind of just destroy them all.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that this game does. It throws a lot of big enemy groups at you.
Yes. Yeah. With somewhat intelligent AI,
Yeah, smarter than they used to be. They'll still, like, if you go, like, 100 meters away, they'll still be like, oh, you crossed the invisible line.
Yeah, yep.
My electric fence is activated.
Red Rover, Red Rover.
And they'll do that stupid thing where they start walking towards you, and then they back away.
Uh-huh.
And then they turn around and walk away.
Yeah. Why? Why?
The monsters of Bloodborne are just not that motivated.
No. No, they got their own things to do, like roast werewolves on gigantic crosses.
But yeah, it's just, you can go on with the trick transformation.
Oh, yeah, well, though. I mean, that's pretty much it. You can also integrate these transformations into combos. So if you're poking away with the cane, you can then hit the transformation button in the middle of the combo, and you'll do an attack that now both transforms and damages with the whip. And then you can, you know, switch back onto that into something else.
Yeah. And it's a unique attack, so it can have some combo potential. I find that with the cane, there's not a ton of combo potential with transforming, but like I said, with the Kirkhammer, which is a really cool weapon, which I'll explain in a second, that's when I really was like, oh shit, like combos in this game are real. And the thing with the Kirkhammer is it's the two different parts of the Kirkhammer feel really, really distinct.
Absolutely.
The first is like a sword. Like just a little normal short sword, kind of like the cane.
It's more of like honestly, you get more distance than the cane, certainly. I'd say it's, you know, going to be 1.3 times larger. So you're dealing with like a regular sword.
Yeah, yeah. So it looks more or less like a sword, a little bit longer than the cane. But when you transform, he like slots the sword
into
the
gigantic tombstone that's laying on your back.
And then it's like this huge heavy weapon. And when you swing it, you're like, oh, this has so much wind-up. Like, how can you use this thing? But then, like, I was kind of just dicking around, and I was like, oh, I wonder what happens if I, like, hit the enemy once with the sword and then transform.
Mm-hmm.
And what ends up happening is you stunlock weaker enemies, and then you transform, and then you just whack them with a hammer.
Yeah, it's a great animation, too, because you still have your sword in one hand, and you pull this oversized mallet off your back with your other hand and just, like, drop it on a dude and then slot your weapon in.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very cool. Yeah.
And if you have enough stamina, you can follow that up with a extremely long-reaching thrust with the hammer.
Yeah, it's super cool. different weapons have like different rules for their transformation. Like, for example, when I transform my cane, I lose access to my secondary weapon, my gun. Or no, I keep access to my secondary weapon.
Yeah.
But like if you transform the Kirkhammer, you lose it.
Yep.
But then there's like the rifle spear, which I haven't really messed with too much, where you actually, when you transform, you just throw a gun on the end of your spear. So you can still fire your gun, which is really cool.
Can you still fire it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because the only way that I've noticed to fire is mid-combo out of that transformation or into it. If you're mid-combo, you'll shoot like a shotgun blast and back up.
Yeah, he does it. I've been able to do it just messing around in the Hunter's Dream.
If you're just pulling the R or the L2 trigger, do you shoot it like a gun?
Yep, you do. It seems to be like a blunderbuss that you throw it on the end there.
Okay.
I haven't really, like I said, I haven't really explored the potential there. And it seems like some of the weapons are like really tricky. Like the stake driver, which Griffin...
Yeah. I switched. I started using a lot of that, actually.
Did you try it out?
I've used it before, but now I've sunk a bunch of like improvement points into it because I'm just like elbows deep into blood stones or whatever they were called, like the improvement.
Yeah, you get so many of them.
yeah. So I've got that thing as high as I can go without using more precious minerals or resources. Yeah. So I've been using the stake driver a little bit. I'm not in love with it, but
it's really interesting though. It's the cool thing about it is that when you transform, you like it's like this like pokey weapon that has some mechanical chicanery going on. So when you transform, you like prime it. It's like a piston.
Yeah.
And then you can release it at any time and it shoots out and does damage.
Yeah. It's essentially it's like a jackhammer that's on your wrist and you can prime it. Like you said, you like lock this bolt up into it and you have a little short poking weapon where you're doing multiple little stabs.
Yeah.
And then as you said, once you unleash that, you can either use it for, you know, like a big blast damage, or you can transform it, and then you have a little bit longer extension. You're doing more sweeping, slashing attacks. Yeah.
The hard thing about it is that the range on, like, the charge attack, for example, is really short.
Oh,
so
it's
you
terrible.
Have to be really good. And also, the other tricky thing is that I feel like, unlike most other weapons, like, I kind of would prefer to use it for normal attacks when it's transformed. Because when it transforms, you just charge forward repeatedly when you attack. Mm. Have you noticed that? You just poke.
Yeah, on the short way, when it's locked and loaded.
Yes, when it's not transformed, you just sweep, and your sweeps kind of suck.
Like, they do, but it is kind of your crowd control option.
Yeah, so there definitely seems to be some weapons that, like, maybe are amazing, and that one is actually, it seems like it could be amazing, because it has a really, really long charge attack that does, like, over 300 damage, at least. Yeah.
It's at least three times, well, it's probably double the Kirkhammer's wind-up.
Yeah, and it empties your entire stamina bar.
Yeah.
So it's really... it's really interesting, and it seems like it has a lot of potential for really skilled players, but I can't do this.
It not only does it empty your stamina gauge, it knocks you back. Like, it'll put your character into, like, a stun lock, and then you also won't start regenerating stamina until you get out of that lock. Like, you get a couple frames of non-activity.
Yeah.
So normally, like, you'll slash, and as soon as that's done, your stamina will start regenerating. But this, there's like a 3-second beat where you got to wait. So you're essentially boned unless you can stun something with that hit.
Yeah, it's highly punishable for sure.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's potentially really good. I just can't wrap my head around it. What was I going to say? Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff there. And another kind of simplification is that they've definitely kind of dumbed down, probably in a good way, the weapon upgrades.
Yeah.
They now, instead of like different kinds of like material for different upgrades, it's all like bloodstone shards for everything.
Yeah.
That's the way you upgrade.
Yeah.
They all follow roughly the same upgrade path. And now the new kind of customization feature are the aforementioned blood gems that Griffin alluded to earlier. And what I like about them is that you never have to commit. Like, you can just slot them in and take them out.
That was the biggest shock when I was like, you go and you modify that. And I'm like, well, this is going to be my weapon forever, I guess. And you put that really good gem on there. And then I just immediately try, like, oh, I can take this off? No.
Well, I think the reason that they did that is because there's not that many weapons in the game. Like, it seems like they really dole them out. I mean, there are enough. But compared to the previous game, there are just not a lot of things to, like, a lot of choices. So I feel like if you had, like, your one copy of a whole bunch of weapons and then you fucked them up by putting the wrong things in them, that would really, you know what I mean? It'd really suck.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like as unfair as Dark Souls games can sometimes be, and as much as their tendency is to, like, lock you into a certain pathway, they always make it possible to win.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, you could theoretically, like, Twitch plays Pokemon, a Dark Souls game, because you'll never fully lose. Like, you always have a chance.
Right. You can always keep beating your head against the same enemy until you could hypothetically win, which happened with me with a blood starved beast.
Yeah, so I feel like there's always this kind of hypothetical idea that you could, you know, you can get out of it. And I feel like maybe the feeling was if your weapons were locked into different customizations, you wouldn't feel that way.
And it also, like, would shortchange a lot of the gems out there. So, like, the enemies will, just regular enemies will drop them, and, you know, your most common will be, like, 0.04 percentage increase to, or it's, like, 0.4% increase to your base stats or something, and you're like, cool. And then immediately after that, you find, like, 0.7. You're like, okay, I see where you're going with this video game.
is there any reason to keep those, or should I just start selling them?
Start selling them, yep.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. They're not worth much, but they're just annoying. They just clutter my inventory.
Yep.
And that seems to be the most common pickup. Like, they really reduced the scope of, like, the weird derpy items. They're still out there, but they're not many.
I'm still finding quite a lot of derpy items. Like, the pebble. The pebble that's like a freaking beach ball.
Dude, the pebble has some utility.
Really?
I mean, it's a little bit redundant with the gun, which is kind of the other big new addition. But I don't know. You can use it for luring mobs. It can be useful.
Yeah. Well, okay. So to move
on
to the
next.
The
shining coins, I still see. Yeah,
there's nothing there. as Jeff said, like, so you have a gun. The other big difference besides, like, you're tricking out your weapon is you're offhand. You're encouraged to carry a pistol of some, or a firearm of some kind.
Yeah.
And this will give you, you know, potential to lure enemy mobs by shooting it. But then the biggest tool that it provides is a parry. So your monster that you're fighting begins to wind up, and you pop your gun, fire on them, and they'll essentially be stunned, and you can run up and then do like a mega damaging visceral attack is what they call it.
Yeah, in that way, it's kind of like a shield, except it's just doesn't provide you any defense.
Yeah.
And it also has range, which makes it really interesting, because you can actually do like ranged stuns and then get in there. But what was I going to say about the guns?
So you have also really a diversity of guns. Yeah. You're not going to kill a monster by using that. Well, at least with not the guns that we've encountered yet.
Exactly. Well, that's what I like about them, though. Like, I feel like it was smart of the developers to make the guns. Like, because guns are strong. Guns are going to kill everything. But if you make a game where guns are strong, that's super boring. Like, I'm really glad that they both put them in and made them as piddly as they can be. Mm-hmm. Because I think it really makes things really interesting. Like, I want my ranged weapon to suck. And they took out stuff like the bow, which just allowed you to cheese a lot of encounters.
Yeah.
Which I like. But yeah, you were starting to say, what were you starting to say? I don't remember.
Oh, I just talked about the gun, which you followed up, and that's pretty much all there is. Just like the weapon, there's different guns. You can't trick your gun to make it do different things. There are, you know, a diversity of weapons as well. Yeah. And the very, again, another interesting mechanic that was applied to the gun is it having a limited ammo capacity. You can only carry 20 bullets on you at a time. So each time you use your gun, you're losing the chance to use it later.
But you can actually, which I've started to do this, especially against the boss we're both, well, you just beat him, but the boss we were both fighting. You can just get 5 bullets at any time by sacrificing, like, some amount of HP.
You can do it once a life.
No, you can do it as many times as you want, but once you've done it, you get your +5 and you have to use them all.
Oh, okay. So after you run your 5 out, you can get 5 more?
Exactly. Oh, so you never fully run out, but you're also limited in your healing items, so you're kind of, you know, you have to be careful when you do that.
Yep.
But the thing you can do is you can sacrifice your health, and then it does the same thing that it would do if you get hit normally. So if you're right near a dude, you can just sacrifice your health and just start wailing on him.
Yeah, and get a good chunk of it back. Yep.
Yeah.
And then speaking of limited items, you know, there's the divergence from the Estus flask. So your healing powers is no longer an item-driven thing, which is in your inventory. You have vials, which, again, you have 20 of, and you just tap the triangle button and you jab a syringe into your leg and you regain about, you know, half your health.
You just old snake that needle into your leg.
Delicious.
The thing about that, it just kind of annoys me because the game has really, really bad loading times, just getting that out there. And when you have to grind for your healing items and your bullets after you die to a boss, it's like such a downer.
Yep.
It just makes me so sad.
Yeah. Definitely the biggest weak point of Bloodborne right now is it's probably 40-second load times in between going or like a death or transitioning from a location to another location.
It just doesn't make any sense to me either because the area, like people are pointing out, the area is already loaded. Like why does it take you so long to respawn? Like, what's the issue here? Like, do the enemies require like 40 seconds to reload?
Yeah. I mean, it's been stated that it's going to be patched, that will be corrected through a patch.
Well, it'll be, hopefully, they're looking at ways to improve it. So yeah. It's kind of like, we'll see.
It really needs to, because it just, you know, you die, you will die. And when you do, you know, insult on top of the injury is just having to sit there and stew for 40 seconds to just think about what you did.
It
and
sucks
not being
way
able
more
to jump in again. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like my last, like I played some Demon's Souls, Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2, I played on PC and I experienced near instant respawns. Mm-hmm. So like just having this happen is like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. It's miserable. And then just as you said, you know, grinding for soul or for echoes, the blood echoes, which is your currency, or trying to get more items, bullets or health, well, either one, like having to reload a location to do that is
exactly just... because now the so-called lamps, like, they don't restore your health, which feels a little bit more hardcore. Mm-hmm. But they also don't respawn the enemies.
Yeah,
so it's like shit, like I have to go back to the hub world and then go back to the other area. So mm-hmm. it's gonna take me another minute if I want to make the rounds on this world again.
Yeah.
So like just the act of refilling your consumables is like so tedious. It's right. really frustrating.
And you know, I hate complaining about a minute load time, because it's like, yeah, we're living in a modern era. Like things, you know, it's a minute. Like, who cares? It's 1 minute. Like,
I
can look at my phone for a minute. But what happens is, you know, you're playing other games like Super Meat Boy or, you know, Ollie or just other games that are out there right now. And it's like you screw up and the option to restart is instantaneous and you're going again. And not having that here is just it's cast into sharp relief by these other games.
No, I think it's a legit problem. I don't think it's just like spoiled gamer syndrome. I think it really does make the game hard to play sometimes. And it's such a shame, because it really is a very solid game. Mm-hmm. But just having this issue crop up repeatedly, it's like, you know, I use all 20 of my bullets on a boss and then I need more bullets. How am I going to get them? It's going to take me like 15 to 20 minutes to farm the bullets just so I can fight this boss again. It's like, I don't want to do that. What I have noticed, though, is that... I didn't realize this at first, but if you farm extras, they go to your storage or whatever, and then when you die, they're automatically refilled from your storage, which is nice.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Something else I've started doing to kind of get back to the offhand weapons for a second. Like, if I'm farming an area, I just do not use bullets. And what I do mm-hmm. is I actually throw on the torch, which you kind of alerted me to, Griffin, because mm-hmm. you can wear other stuff in your offhand other than just the... other than just the guns, and I throw on a torch, and you can actually swing that torch and do some damage with it, like some pretty respectable damage. And it also like makes mobs like run away from you. Some of them cover their eyes. Or,
certain ones are impacted by the torch.
Yeah, I haven't noticed the werewolves running away, to be honest, but it definitely works on the weak guys. They like cover their eyes. They're like,
The halfling mummy werewolves. They are affected by it. Yeah.
It definitely alerts enemies, though, because like I'll like go into a room where an enemy normally wouldn't see me, and then it'll be right behind me as I'm killing.
Oh, really?
You.
I have not found that to be the case, having the torch.
Well, the hand lantern does not, but the torch does.
Huh.
Yeah. At least in certain circumstances. But it's still pretty cool, though. Yeah. I'm liking what they were doing with the offhand weapons. And I also like how the game tosses you a shield partway through, but it's just like this little piddly wooden thing.
Wooden shield. And it's like, the item description says in it, like, probably don't use this.
it's a pretty fun game. I really need those load times to be patched so I can sit down with it for 2 hours and like actually do something.
Yeah, not be discouraged by dying. And
I know,
just,
I know.
It's so easy to die and then just walk away from that game.
Exactly.
I think the other big thing that is worth noting is kind of like the world design and the bosses and how that might differ from Dark Souls 2 especially, and maybe Dark Souls, since you probably have more experience with that.
Yeah, well, I do have some things to say about that. First of all, I think the art and like enemy design is way cooler. I think it definitely shows that this was developed by the A team and not the B team, mm-hmm. personally.
You're the werewolf.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of werewolves, but they look cool. Like, I'm okay with that. They look cool and they're distinct, as far as I can tell, and the way they attack. And you said there's less werewolves later, according to some insider information.
Listening to other stories on other podcasts, like there is some variety.
But the world in general is just a really, it's a really cool little world. What I will say about it is that the level design feels more Demon's Souls. It's kind of this weird middle line between Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2, where the world is very interconnected, but it's also very linear. Like, there are a few pathways mm-hmm. that kind of take you to different places, but it does not, it definitely lacks that kind of really interconnected, crazy feeling of Dark Souls, where you can, like, go off in three different directions
yeah.
from the end of the game.
Yeah.
Like, this game has a path it wants you to follow. And it started to split for me a little bit, but, like, it's nothing like Dark Souls in the way that you could just kind of go any way you wanted, and there's, like, stuff to discover each way.
Right, right. Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's all. That's all.
I remember in Dark Souls, like, you would go through a location and then find a door at the end of it, walk through the door, and you're like, holy crap, I just came out right at, like, this hub world where I didn't even know this was an option. And
how did this elevator just take me home? What the hell?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or it could even just be, like, a short, like, a walking through a cave or something like that, and you're at this location where you're like, oh, God, like, how does this is insane that this fits into this world. And then in a 2, that was kind of thrown away where...
Completely.
Yeah.
It was just like, yeah, get to the end and teleport home.
Yeah. Very weird. And you're absolutely right. Like, there's this middle ground here where you can see the choices that you get to. Like, you're like, oh, there's a locked door. I'll probably get that open eventually when I go this way long enough.
But when you open them, it's like, holy shit.
Well, it's...
At least for me.
Yeah, it's more of just like, okay, I earned that. Like, I slogged through this garbage, and now I got the door open, and I feel like I deserve that shortcut.
Yeah. I also way fewer like lamps and respawn points. Mm-hmm. The game really gets a lot of mileage. Like, you'll go into an area, you'll find the first lamp of the area, which is their equivalent of the bonfire. And you're like, okay, like, I'll just keep playing until I get to the next one. And there just is no next one until after you beat the boss.
Yeah.
And the way they deal with that is they'll just put, like, 3 shortcuts in every area. And that's pretty cool. Because, like, you'll be going through the world and you're like when you find those shortcuts, you're like, wow, that's a really interesting shortcut. I didn't think they would be able to pull that off in terms of, like, just pure geometry. But they do.
And it's totally something they can get away with too, because you're not having you're not required to recharge your health regen item at a bonfire. Like, you're getting the drops off enemies, you're getting the health regen off killing enemies, so you can just keep pushing forward and maintain the capacity to heal yourself. You don't have to backtrack and do that.
I find it interesting just the way which they've kind of just decided, like, we don't need as many save points.
Yeah.
Strange, but I've definitely gotten used to it now. It's something I've come to expect in every world. It's like, okay, like, keep going until you get the shortcut, not until you find the next bonfire.
Yeah. I mean, so. And they make that very clear when you start Bloodborne. You, like, I was expecting to find a lantern almost immediately out of that first room, and then it's like,
after
nope.
You get through, like, the 40 enemies, it's like, I guess I have to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, no help, nothing. Like, you just, it's like a marathon. But then after you do it, it just becomes like, it's a good conditioning to realize that this is not the game that's going to be letting you, you know, kind of have a safe haven every couple feet.
Yeah, I kind of miss the ritual of the bonfire, like sitting there. Like, I don't know, something about just the animations and like the process of being there and strengthening your weapons. I liked that, and I do miss it. But I respect what they're trying to do. I think I'd feel more okay with, like, I think the Hunter's Dream would replace that for me better. That's like the hub world where you level up.
Mm-hmm.
If it would just load faster.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the biggest problem in the game.
But something about, like, the feeling of sitting at a bonfire I miss. Like, even just sitting there seeing the different ghosts wandering by and stuff, it just, something about it was special, and it's kind of sad to see that go.
I don't miss that at all.
I'm weird. So,
I
know,
like, the weirdness of the Hunter's Dream. I really like how weird that is.
Yeah, I wish there was a couple more NPCs in there, but I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm. Like, finding the bird bath and engaging with little critters in it, like, it's very strange.
I love when the dude is like, you can use the doll if you want. Like, you're going to have sex with it.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Then, yeah, you know, this is just Japan. Like, ugh, gross. Okay, ugh.
we're back in the sex shop again.
Uh-huh. Oh, no. The Hunter's Dream is the top floor.
I thought that was pretty cool because I kind of knew that that's what the doll was for.
Oh,
so I was like, oh, this is creepy and weird.
Yeah,
and I like how creepy and weird it feels.
Yep, I do too. So. Some of the conversations that lead off from that too are also really interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess my final thought on Dark Soul, Bloodborne is about the bosses, and as we talked about this extensively offline, and that's the first boss that you encounter just kind of sets the tone for how you're going to be playing the game, and that's like aggressively, like the game requires you to be aggressive, and they are unique encounters that you're running into. Though there is a lot of werewolf, how they all act is very interesting. But then the encouragement to be in its face and be aggressively attacking at it, using your gun to parry, and kind of just going nuts instead of being more patient and methodical with a boss fight. I'm really enjoying that aspect of it.
I wasn't crazy about the first boss, and I'm still not crazy about it. I think that boss, it kind of reminds me of like the Capra Demon, and that it's just kind of frustratingly random as to whether or not you get a good rhythm. I thought anyway. I kind of want to try again and see if like with the knowledge I have now, I would do better. I wouldn't die as much. But yeah. That boss just felt different from every other boss to me.
Really?
Yeah. I think that fighting the hunters feels more like emblematic of what this game is supposed to be, where you just are like crazy dodging and like looking for opportunities to just shoot someone in the face, knock him over, and stab him. Like that's what I feel like the game is more like.
That's the vibe I got with the Father Gascoigne boss, where it's very parry heavy, very dodgy, very aggressive, but still looking for that opening instead of just going buck wild and slashing away. I had no problem with that boss.
This is the first game where I felt like I should be parrying bosses. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's true. There are definitely things. The way that I'm viewing it, though, is every encounter is every item that's in your toolbox is something that you can be using. So I'm bringing the pain by diving in and slashing away. And then if I'm ever finding myself like out of stamina or something, I'm not completely hosed because I have my gun to parry and get out of there. Or I can, you know, wait just a beat and do another dodge and be saved by in the invincibility frames. And just having all those tools under your belt, I think is more beneficial to my playstyle than if it's just like, okay, you know, roll in, stab, 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 roll away. Having all those things, I really enjoy.
Something I will say is that Bloodborne seems much more clear about how it wants you to play the game than previous games. You're kind of like, it's like, you're not going to defend, sorry. You're not going to be a magic user. You're not going to be a range spammer. You're going to play the game the way that it's best, which is with melee.
Absolutely.
But that's another thing that I think is kind of a big takeaway. Like this is Souls now. Like maybe it won't be next time, but right now this is Souls. Mm-hmm. This is how you do it. So
this is what's unique to this game is you have, if you want differentiation, you're going to find it in the weapons you choose to use, not the stats, not the builds you make your character.
Yeah. Not the magic spammer, not the range of user, not the, you know, the shield, whatever.
Yeah. And that's why I think your comparison to Monster Hunter is very apt, because it's like, I like to play a Kirkhammer, and that is very much like reminiscent of playing a hammer or like a big heavy weapon in Monster Hunter, opposed to like the cane, which would be, you know, your sword and shield sort of thing, or your twin daggers in Monster Hunter, where it's very vastly different move sets that can appeal to different players based on their play style.
I'm definitely on the whole having a pretty great time with it, and I'm sure I'll finish it up and be thrilled with it, and pretty fun game.
Definitely, me too.
So now that we've handled that beast
out of the way,
out of the way. It's done. No more,
talking about Bloodborne ever.
Griffin, you want to talk about some other stuff that's been you've been playing? Maybe pound through some of that.
Yeah, let me pound it.
Pound it.
Speaking
pound
of,
it like I pounded coffees this morning.
I played Final Fantasy Type O for the PlayStation 4 HD, whatever the hell that full name was.
What you got to say about that game?
It's all right.
Oh, you've come around.
I mean, it's also been like 2 weeks in the rearview mirror. But after we talked, I did play it more. I restarted it and kind of got a better feel for what the hell is happening in it. And I'm honestly trying to think right now, since I've got Dark Souls so saturated in my blood. Final Fantasy Type-O is that phone game that was then turned into a PSP game or Vita yep. game or whatever. And
then just directly up-resed into a PS4 game.
Yeah.
for better or worse.
Yeah. It's supposed to be a card game, not a card game anymore. Now it's yet another
Monster
Hunter
clone. It's
still got,
like, the vestiges of a card game, though.
It does. It does. In that it sucks.
No, I meant your main dude, or he's not even your main dude. He's nope. just a dude.
Yep.
He can use cards.
Yeah, he uses cards. He throws them. So I don't know what to say. It's your typical like JRPG. Your kids in a school who are all special and whatnot. The story is Final Fantasy, like, side story at its best. So making not a goddamn lick of sense one bit.
It was kind of sad when that guy died. Chocobo.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, it's been touted as being a little bit darker, and that intro is
of war.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that you don't really see in Final Fantasy games, and
for sure, yeah,
they do that thing which everybody's been wanting a Final Fantasy game to do for the longest time, where somebody's like, heal, 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 and the guy just dies anyway. You're like, wait a second.
To be fair, they actually did do that in Final Fantasy IV. It was way cheesier, but they did do it.
Oh,
So there.
Oh, well, you're right. It comes back. What's old is new. yeah, it's a emotional moment, I guess, which is weird for a Final Fantasy game. But then after that, you well, I mean, yeah. It's you then jump into the bullshit of Final Fantasy, which is like gigantic monster demons of magic empowered things are fighting, and you have no idea, like warring empires and whatnot. So to get into the meat and potatoes of the actual gameplay, you have like a AP gauge and or actually you have magic gauge, and all your attacks deplete it, and then you regain that by just doing regular attacks. So you have, I think, what, 14 characters eventually at your disposal, and all of them have kind of unique properties. So you've got like your rangers who use pistols or arrows or whatever, and you got your close quarters fast damage guys, and then you got your mid and what have you, like different combinations, you know the archetypes.
That's kind of, well, that's what I didn't like about it when I played it. I don't mind the Final Fantasy bullshit, it just felt really anime.
It's super anime, absolutely. Yeah,
boring anime, not like good anime.
Yeah, really, really boring. I rode a chocobo around. So after I clear the intro, it is based in the world of Final Fantasy 13. So they're saying like Falseal a lot or whatever.
Well, it's like the universe, right? It's not the same world. It's the same universe.
Yeah, you're not. I mean, maybe you do at some point. Who knows?
Well, as I understand it, just based on like reading about it online, it's the mythos is similar, but like they take like the actual areas are completely different.
Oh yeah. You're not in the same cocoon or whatever the hell they were called.
Exactly.
But,
cocoon. Yeah.
Yeah, you are running into similar verbiage like Falseal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so after you get through the intro, you unlock, like, the school, which has all your hub crap. Like, this is the weapon zone, this is the place where you go to the cemetery and can't figure out what the hell that means. and then you can, like, go on little bite-sized missions. So you go to a town, you're like, I'm gonna kill all these dudes here, and then I'll have the town under my control. And what I assume is that if you do enough of those, then you unlock, like, the next major story beat. You're creating a loadout too. So you jump into the little mini mission. You're like, I'm gonna bring in these six guys instead of my full team, and this is my active party. But it seems like there's a countdown. So If you bring in...
That's what I hear, yeah.
Yeah, like, you can only use these superpowered people for so long, and then they just get subbed out with, like, little inky black shadows of regular dudes.
I've also heard that the game itself, like, runs on a timer.
Yeah, it does. Like, you have to spend so much time in the hub world before it's like, okay, the next mission's ready. And I didn't spend enough time to really get a good grasp of what that details. Like, I can see that being a vestige from a phone game for sure.
Also just PSP, like that era, that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah. Do you mean like the kind of stamina recharge system?
Well, yeah, like you cannot play until it is ready to go in six gotcha. Hours.
Or you can pay money.
Yeah. But I have not spent enough time with it, and I will not spend enough time with it to understand that fully, because that game is super boring.
That's unfortunate. I want to dig in and give it a chance. It does seem it kind of reminds me of Peace Walker in that, like, it kind of promises to maybe give some story stuff and be interesting and Final Fantasy-ish, and then it's like, first, do all this bullshit.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm like, well, I don't really want to do the bullshit. And I'm like, no, you have to. That's pretty much most of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, okay, sure. So, yep. I don't know.
That's it. That's pretty much it in a nutshell.
That seems to be like the PSP mainline school of design, like mainline franchise game school of design.
Uh-huh. Let's make Monster Hunter with a story.
Monster Hunter style grinding. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It seems kind of disappointing, which sucks.
Do you want to go one for one? Do you talk about some a game next?
Sure. I'll mention a game which I actually had been playing the last time we talked, but I forgot to talk about it. That game is called Catacomb Kids. This is a roguelike. I'm a big surprise I play roguelikes. It is a 2D kind of platformer roguelike, kind of like Spelunky. Mm-hmm. Except it's early access right now, so it's very much not complete. Except it definitely borrows a lot more heavily from like roguelike type games, like actual, like, you know, I don't know, what are the ones? Rogue and what are the big ones? What are the big roguelikes? Help me out here.
Rogue Legacy.
What are the big rogue styled games? Like the actual ones.
Oh, okay. Like Rogue.
Yes, Rogue. Well, okay. I can't remember the other ones. Net something, or, you know, those things. Anyway,
Shirin the Wanderer?
That's a mystery dungeon, but yeah, basically. Okay, anyway, so it borrows more heavily from those. Like, you have, like, you know, potions that you have to identify by drinking them or throwing them at enemies. You have, like, class system.
Binding,
like, you have,
of,
like,
Isaac. Would you consider...
Yeah, but this... I do. So the point I'm trying to make is that...
Toe Jam and Earl.
NetHack is another one. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that games like Binding of Isaac borrow certain elements from those types of games. Like, they borrow the random items. They borrow, you know, permadeath. This game borrows a little more heavily because you have classes. Well, so does Binding of Isaac to some degree. But you have, like, straight up, like, classes that were borrowed from, like, those old games. You have, you know, like I said, the random potions where you don't know what they do until you drink them. You throw them at people. You have, like, randomized loot, which is, like, really random. Just, like, you know, has random titles attached to the end of it, and, like, you know, some of it might be cursed or whatever and stuff like that. And it's also really, really hard and just, like, stupidly punishing. And you know, like, you walk into the first level and the first dude will just kill you in one hit. But it's cool because it's so random. It has a lot of interesting possibilities, and some of those possibilities are, like, physics based like, there are traps that you can manipulate to do stuff for you. Like, you can kill a slime, like a green slime, throw it on a little pressure plate, and then a giant, like, crushing thing falls down, but it'll bounce off the slime.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Like, you can also, like, take the slime you killed and throw it at an enemy, and it sticks to his face and makes it hard for him to see.
Huh.
And you can take that same slime, and you can melt it by exposing it to fire, and then you can slurp up the melting slime and restore your health. Yeah, it's a lot of interesting little things like that, or, like, like, you have fire, and you can light, like, you can heat up a boulder and then drop the boulder in water, and the boulder, with its residual heat, will start boiling the water, and you can cook it in the water. Or you can, like, there'll be piranhas swimming in the water, and the boiling water will kill all the piranhas.
Oh, that's super cool. So, yeah, there's a lot more, like, kind of creativity to how you manipulate the world and less of like just combat.
It's less rigid, and it's more kind of reminiscent of those old games that are like actually like Rogue and NetHack and stuff, like where you had like a bunch of tools, but they were just really well integrated and like all the different potentialities were thought about. A lot more emergent gameplay, a lot more like weird things that you wouldn't think of happening. Like I said, like, you know, throwing the boulder in water, setting it on fire, burning the piranhas, eating the piranhas to restore your health, whatever. Like, just a lot more interesting little interactions like that that you have to kind of discover on your own. And it's a fun little game. I mean, right now there's only one kind of, like, there's only one or two map types and a few bosses and a few, like, kind of little randomized events. But what's there is really cool. And they've given you a lot of nice little toys to fiddle around with. And I've just been having a lot of fun, like, when I'm just kind of hanging out and don't really have the energy to boot up the console or play whatever else, and I just kind of want to sit around on the computer, I just load that up and play it. And, you know, you can play a couple 10-minute runs and have a great time.
Sounds really cool.
It's really fun. I recommend watching a video of the game in action and seeing kind of what it looks like and how it feels.
Okay.
Because it's pretty fun. But I don't need to say anything else about it, except that I would definitely recommend it. And I'll probably talk more about it when it comes out of early access later this year.
Is there any word of it coming to console, or would it fit out on a console, do you think, with the controls?
It would, because I play it with an Xbox controller. I don't think he has... It was a Kickstarter game, worth noting.
Of course.
I don't think that he has... Yeah, I know. I don't think that the guy making it, it's one guy, has really spoken to the big console people. I'll actually look into it right now. I don't think he's spoken to anyone yet, but I could see it coming. You know, it's not a game that wouldn't work on a console.
Yeah, you definitely have me interested in it. I would like to. I would play it if it came to a console. That's for certain.
Yeah. Hopefully it will, because it's a cool little game, and I think that it deserves some attention.
Or, you know, the PS Vita, your friend and mine for all roguelike needs.
Yes, please. So yeah, cool little game, and I recommend it. But. Go ahead with one of yours, Griff.
Yeah, of course. Speaking of a Vita-based roguelike-ish game, I played Rainbow Moon when it was out free, I think, last month for the Vita. Or maybe it was before. I forget exactly when it was. But I got it. I tried it out. I don't want to spend too much time on it, so I won't. It is deceptively fun, better than I was expecting it to be. To give a little summary, it does. It's going to be kind of like a dungeon crawler. But you are encountering enemies which then warp you into a battlefield, which is like a square base tactical combat.
You mean like FFT style?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
But you're one character, so you're only one person, and as far as I know, you if you get a party, I have not got anywhere near that yet. Mm. What makes it interesting is you have a very limited number of action points, and if you want to move and attack, you know, you're already, that's pretty much it, and you're always outnumbered. So what I ended up doing a lot of was just like finding a corner, waiting for the enemies to get to me, and then just attacking at it. Kind of boring. But then finally I leveled up enough to get additional movement. Like essentially I get a new turn as if I'm another character. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Do you actually have different actions in turn two?
No, it's the same actions. So like you can move forward, and then you'll use your second turn to move forward even more, like take even more tiles, or you can be in range with an enemy, attack once or attack twice. Mm. So that ends up like you are your own party where you now have three moves in a row, and based on your speed, you could get, you know, you could get a block of four if you're fighting a really slow enemy. But it's entirely possible that down the road you'll get more expanded abilities. There's skills and whatnot that cost points, and everything levels up based on the usage of it. So it's pretty fun.
Is this a free to play game?
I don't think it's free anymore. I think it was PS Plus for a month or two ago. But I think normally it's like $15 or so.
But doesn't it have monetization in it?
Yes. Well, I mean, you can. It's monetized in. Not in like a, it's monetized in like a Tales game where you can buy experience. Like there's the option to buy experience. So
okay.
It's like, do you want to do this or no, you don't have to.
Okay. Okay, I got it. So you don't have to do that. Okay.
No.
That's less scummy than I thought it was.
It's not timer based. There's none of those things involved in it. There is like a day night cycle. That sounds right.
Okay,
but I'm not certain. That's really all there is to say about it. I kind of lost interest because there's nothing like besides the combat of note in that game.
Art looks nice. I'm looking at it right now.
It looks good on the Vita.
Yeah, I'll bet it does. It's got some nice colors. Mm-hmm. Kind of looks like a Korean MMO.
Yeah, it kind of does. Yeah.
But you know, those always look pretty enough, I guess. So there's that.
Yeah, yeah. I played a lot of Ragnarok Online.
Very cool. Well, I mean, maybe not that cool, but interesting. I kind of wanted to hear a little bit about that game. I feel like I have the most basic sense of it now.
It definitely surprised me. I was not expecting it to have that kind of a depth for combat.
Well, since you did a brief summary of a game, I'll talk briefly about a game which I actually previously mentioned, which is Elliot Quest. I kind of talked about it and how I was having a good time with it. Kind of a better time with it than that other game, Ori in the Blind Forest, for some reason, despite the fact that it was very under the radar. I was having a lot of fun with it, and I unlocked a new item, and it has similarly like crazy possibilities in terms of opening up the world, like 8,000 different applications.
Oh, cool.
Which is really cool. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. I want to keep playing. I want to get through the whole game. I'm just completely stuck. I have no idea what to do. I've explored, I think, the entire world, and I just can't proceed. And I'm so sad. I wish the game were less under the radar so I could figure out what the hell needs to happen now. If I like actually dug into it, maybe I could find something online that would tell me what to do, but it just sucks that, you know, previously there was a pretty good balance between like finding, like I think I mentioned, you find shit and like it doesn't tell you anything about it. It's just like, oh, you know, hold the thing over your head and now you have it. Yeah. Which I was kind of cool with, but now like I need some signposting. Like please give me some signposting so I can figure out what I need to do next, because I have no idea. So yeah, it kind of sucks. If I ever get back into it, I'll let you know, because it looks like there's a lot more game left, but oh well.
Yeah,
kind of a bummer. So yeah, that's pretty much Elliot Quest. Just completely stuck.
The Elliot Quest check-in.
Yes, the Elliot Quest check-in. But Griffin, you may take the reins again.
Okay, well, this is where I think we're going to converge nicely here. So you and I both played a little game for the iOS called Final Fantasy Record Keeper, which I guess is Square Enix's. I don't even know how to say this, but it's their DNA style. iPhone game that has
it's their penance for all the bravest.
yeah well said. I don't think this really merits a lot of discussion, the Final Fantasy Record Keeper. I think it's better than it could have been. In terms of the gameplay, you are let's see here. What are you doing? It does have like an actual Final Fantasy style battle system, which, you know, and active time battle. So you're going into an encounter and you are selecting moves based on a timing gauge, and you do have to be speedy. And you are designing a party and manipulating it and getting items and equipping stuff.
Wait, do you have to be speedy? I thought once it's your turn, the game pauses.
I did not find that to be the case.
Oh, okay. I guess I forgot.
Bars are still filling when it's your turn.
Okay.
But you can kind of also circumvent most of that by just hitting the auto button, since most encounters don't matter until you get to a boss, which then you may need to engage in a more, you have to manipulate your party directly in order to get the results you want. So bosses may have affinities, or they may, for example, your friend and mine, the scorpion boss from Final Fantasy VII, we all know that like when it raises its tail, it counterattacks. So you get that to that boss, and you can't just keep hammering through it on an auto attack. You have to defend and wait for its tail to go back down. Otherwise,
I noticed when I was fighting that boss, the tail just kind of went up. Like I remember now that it is bars fill normally, but the tail just kind of went up without any warning.
Yeah,
like I had selected attack and the tail just went up.
Yeah,
and I was trying to figure out, is that just a tutorial thing
it
to
is.
Just get me to use? Okay, yep. yeah,
It is. But when you go and you fight it again, it's something that you'll have to actually be aware of. But yeah.
Let me ask you a question. That Bahamut spell that Dr. Mog let me use just this one time. All the other times, I'm guessing I have to give him energy orbs for it, right?
No, you don't.
Oh,
no. Okay. So right. I think, Jeff, you're coming at this with very jaded expectations of paying as much money as possible to this game.
I looked into the matrix of like monetization possibilities, and they looked so immense.
And it looked back into you.
Yes.
No, it's not bad at all. It's very much like the Gung Ho Games style of monetization, where it's like you can pay to have more stamina, which essentially means like you can play more levels in a day. But if you're just playing the main storyline and not grinding, like you're going to get refills at a steady rate that you won't have to do that. Then the other side is if you want like additional items, like so you have your party members and you're like, I can roll the dice and use my tokens to get a new item. But I can also spend real money to roll the dice and get a new item too.
The problem is when I logged into the game, it was like, because I had played the first level and I was like, this isn't so bad. Like, you know, it's not my favorite and it's kind of ugly, but the sprite work is good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this got some interesting potential. It looks fun enough. And then I logged in and it was like, hey, there's an event going on right now. You get 11 relic draws for the price of 10. And I was like, oh God. And it just took me straight there. And I was just staring at a pachinko machine. And I was like, what is this?
I'm used to this. You know, my excursion into Puzzle and Dragons and Monster Strike this year, all that is just standard practice. You get a discount by paying
over. You're just like, whatever.
But I think the one thing that separates this from those games is it's not nearly as generous with its free shit. So in the other games, you're getting like an orb or a token or what have you every day just by logging in, or multiple consecutive times you get this thing that's gonna like keep that hook in you to keep playing and keep that gambling up. And this one though, it's you don't get that. Not by any means does it come with the regularity. And it's also a bummer because you know when I'm playing like Monster Strike, which I haven't in a long time.
Good boy.
Like getting a new monster is interesting, and it's like, oh, cool, a new guy. Not a big deal since I'm pretty happy with my current party. In this one, it's so all the weight is so much in the nostalgia of Final Fantasy games. You know, when you roll that dice and you get a leather hat, it's like, oh well, fuck, like really, this is it? And it's adverts like, get Cloud's Buster Sword, unlocks Cloud's special double limit break. And it's like,
it's so scummy though.
No, it's really like, cool. It's like, oh, so this character actually transforms when I apply this item to them.
If I just spend $100, I might get it.
Yeah, I mean, you're not guaranteed to get it, but at the same time, it's nowhere hindering your forward progression into the game. And it's also very cool in that you're exploring Final Fantasy worlds, like you're doing 4, 5, 10, undoubtedly other ones.
Of course you start with Final Fantasy 7.
Yep, 7.
Here's my problem, and it's totally hypocritical, because I don't like games that are just nostalgia unless I do. Basically is what it boils down to. I loved Theater Rhythm, but this didn't grab me.
Yeah, I can see that. I would if you're not going to be sold on it later, but they do some interesting stuff with it, like so for bosses, when you get to a boss encounter, you can defeat it, but then your ranking may only be so high because you didn't meet certain requirements. Like if you had cast a certain spell on a boss and exploited its weakness or attacked it before it performed this attack, you'll get an additional reward, which then boosts up your rating and allows access to additional rewards at the end of the quest.
Yeah, I think if I had just kind of focused on that element, I might have kind of... And again, I didn't really play it for very long because I just kind of was like, oh, not this trash. But it dropped me in the relic draw.
Yeah.
But it, like I said, I appreciate that they actually took the time to make some pretty baller sprites for like 3D enemies.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I really like that. They're not like perfect. They're not quite up to the stuff of old school sprites, but they're pretty good.
Yeah.
And, you know, the combat seemed solid. It didn't seem bad.
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
Yep. I mean, and as you had said, like, do you have to pay to be doing these certain things? No, you certainly don't. But I think the biggest flaw of the game is its complexity and just like speed and lack of optimization of those things. So, for example, you had said like you get to use the Bahamut summon. You can craft that and use it as something on your character as an ability. For example, I got Rydia and she's in my party now, so I would be able to put summons onto her as if they were magic spells.
Interesting. Okay.
But what sucks is then you have to acquire so many reagents that you're able to then craft that thing, and the crafting animation just takes like 3 Bloodborne screens. If we want to use that as a standard measurement of time.
I hope that it has a chance to fail, because that's so stupidly Japanese.
No, definitely not.
Oh my God.
It's just crafting. But then what that's the very basic level. What then it becomes very complex is you can upgrade all your equipment. So you feed equipment to other equipment, and that's the level where I don't like it. Like I get it in Monster Strike and Puzzle and Dragons where that's all you can do. But in this game, you know, you're leveling up your characters. Like you have your Kane and you're going to level up Kane, and he's going to get new stats. But then you can also give him a javelin that you fed another javelin that you fed another javelin. and that's where it gets way too much for me, because I'm like, I don't know if I want to level this up, or do I want to level up my more powerful weapons, or what?
Yeah. See, that's what I hate about like Theater Rhythm, actually. I love the music game part of it because I love music games. But I wish they wouldn't just throw all these needlessly complex elements. Like, I wish, first of all, they wouldn't gate all the songs behind like hours of progression. Second of all, I wish they wouldn't make you equip shit on your characters. Like, no, I'm playing a music game. I'm not playing an RPG. Just like, I've had enough. Yeah. Give me I'll take the cards. I'll collect all the cards. I don't want to equip my characters.
Right.
I don't want to have abilities. Just let me play the game.
Yeah. And this one also really, they try to give a solution to that, which is an optimized button.
Yeah.
But then what that does is it just puts all your most powerful characters in. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I have my party, and then I'm like, oh, my party is Titus, main character guy, Cloud, Kane, and Black Mage. And now I'm like, I want to add Rydia to it because I want her in my party. So I swap Kane out for Rydia. And then I'm like, okay, she has no equipment. Let's equip her.
Optimize.
So I hit the optimize, and it just puts Kane back in. And I'm like,
oh, my God.
No. So now I have to go into
the... You're like, no, I want 6-year-old girls in my party.
Right. I want to... I only party with that way. so then you have to go do all that stuff manually, and then go and level her up, and then if you want to get, like, then you can optimize again, but then if you want to, you know, I don't know, it's a big flaw in that game.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
I know, weird, Final Fantasy having, like, needlessly complicated menus and ability systems.
I just feel like, it's like... I guess I understand that in this game, because you are doing like a straight up RPG combat system.
Yeah.
In Theater Rhythm, it always bugged me because it was just like, why? Why? What's the point?
Stop. Yeah, definitely not the point. But in this one, it is, because your primary interaction is combat.
Yeah, so you're going to be, I mean, you better be ass deep in systems if you're playing that game. So, yeah.
Yep, so I'm pretty much done with it. It just didn't hold my attention because it kind of stops doling out the levels, and I'm stuck with Final Fantasy V, which I don't really have a particular affinity to, so I'm just kind of slogging through that, saying, hey, when's the next, you know, 4, 7, 10 going to open up?
Yeah. Can't wait till 13 opens up.
Oh, baby. Yeah.
Lightning Returns again.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about that? I think we gave it its due diligence.
No, it's fine. Yeah. You know, it's just, it's not noteworthy. It's just a mobile game.
I think it's only noteworthy in that it's Final Fantasy, and it's not as gross as I was expecting it to be.
Correct. Yes. It's good. It's decent. But it's not, you know, it's, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's all.
That brings us to what? The last game we've both played?
Yes, Axiom Verge.
Yeah.
I guess I can talk about it a little bit if you want, since you do the record keeper.
Yeah.
Axiom Verge is
don't say the hybrid portmanteau gross word. It's good. Do your best to avoid calling it that.
You mean Castletroid? No, it's not a Metroid blanker. It's not that. It's just a Metroid ripoff. It's a straight up Metroid ripoff. But not in a bad way. It's actually grown on me. Okay. What drew me to Axiom Verge is that it looks a lot like NES Metroid, except nicer color palette and amazing music. And yep. that is all true. When I started the game,
seconded.
When I started the game, I was like, this is okay. You know, the music is really good still. It doesn't really have anything to really get me. It has gotten me. It's done some really cool things. I don't know how far you are, Griffin. Did you get the lab coat?
Yes.
Okay. That's when I'm like, that's when I got that combined with the address disruptor. I'm like, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Have you gotten the password device yet?
No. All right. Is that going to make things even crazier?
I don't know. That's why I was asking. Because I got it, and I got a password, and I put it in, and it said, hey, you got a trophy for doing this. Now something should change in the game, and it hasn't.
Huh.
So I'm like, oh, geez.
but it's a really cool game. It's very hard. Well, I don't know if it's very hard. It can be hard. It can be punishing. Enemies do a lot of damage to you. And sometimes it just feels like when you're fighting things, it's like you just have to take damage. You just have to tank that damage. Have you had that experience, Griffin?
Yeah, to some extent. There are some. What I have discovered is there's a lot of ways to just circumvent bosses or long chains of enemies.
Sure.
Excuse me, not bosses.
Like how? Like an example.
You can just go into a wall and not have to go through an entire hallway of dudes.
Yes, and that's one of the things which we should touch on. So basically the game, okay, for a while you're kind of playing a game that feels a lot like NES Metroid. It's maybe a little bit of a shadow of Metroid in some ways. Not quite as innovative or whatever. But then you start getting these items which affect the world in interesting ways. Like you get this address disruptor, which lets you corrupt. Well, it lets you reveal hidden platforms, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
but it also. It also lets you corrupt enemies. Mm-hmm. And I think the moment when I was like, this is really interesting, was when I went into a room with dudes that crawled around platforms and shot lasers. This is what you're talking about, right, Griffin?
Yeah.
Yeah. And by this point, you've kind of learned that small enemies are usually able to be corrupted. So you corrupt one of the enemies and the laser changes colors and it stops hurting you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay. So you keep doing that. And then you notice that one of the dudes, he shoots his laser out and it just tears holes in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what is this? And you start to realize that you can corrupt enemies to like make them destroy the environment for you.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. That's when I was like, this is interesting. This is taking things in a new direction.
Yeah. Like, I think the first thing that I noticed in that game, I should say not the first thing. The biggest impression that I have about Axiom Verge is that, okay, so where it diverges from Metroid is you get essentially one tool to move or to manipulate the environment. Like, that's not true, I guess. I guess I should say, like, the tools you get in Metroid to unlock new areas are very obvious.
Mm.
You know, it's like, you have a ball,
yeah.
you can go through tight spaces, you have a bomb, this works in certain spots, like, you have things. In this game, you get things that aren't weapons or necessarily obvious as weapons, and then you just have to try them everywhere because they seem like they're so overpowered you should be able to just cheese the hell out of this game. But it knows that that's what you're going to do, so it has like stop gaps in place for you to not be able to break it.
Here's what I would say about Axiom Verge. It's like Metroid, except somebody made it in like a bizarre world, and instead of doing the normal power progression, they were like, let's do this bizarre ass power up that lets you like progress, but in really weird ways, like warping through a single tile. You're like, what the hell? Like, who would have thought of that strange ass thing? And that's what Axiom Verge does. It's like, why don't you shoot the enemy with your weird, glitchy gun and make it destroy the environment for you, as opposed to like, why don't you space jump through the environment or something? It's just like somebody made Metroid, except all the upgrades are weird.
Yeah, that's very, very accurate. It's all very weird stuff. But, I mean, it's not like you need to use those things to progress the game. Most of those things are just to find hidden stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the lab coat you need.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, you have to use the freeze missile to unlock a door, essentially. Like, you need, you see these areas where these tools become necessary.
Yeah.
But most of the time when you're, like you said, manipulating an enemy to break through a wall, that's not moving the progression of the game forward. It's finding the missile tank.
I guess that's true. I mean, let's see how it develops as it goes on. It definitely doles out the power-ups rather rather frequently, which is kind of a good thing. I don't know if they all get their time to shine, but there are a lot of them.
I can tell you that I have not found something that hasn't been useful yet.
Yeah.
Do you have the spider yet?
No.
Okay.
That sounds really cool, though. Yeah. The last thing I got was a lab coat.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, how obvious is the last boss of this game?
Right. Yeah, right.
It's like the most obvious thing. They're like, here is this guy. I wonder who he is.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Yeah.
Very heavy handed. Yeah.
I'm still gonna give it its fair shake. I want to finish.
Oh, I'm having a great time with it. It's really fun.
I am stuck at the moment. I don't know how to progress.
That sucks.
Yeah.
It seems like it will very quickly become quite unwieldy because it has this thing where it like you get your first couple items and then you go through like four levels before you get your next item and you're like, I just went through so many places with things I can't do. Like, what? How do I like decipher this?
Yeah, yeah.
I got a little bit turned around.
And also with how overpowered a lot of those things seem to be that you get, it's like I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, okay, am I missing something really obvious or do I really need to run around this whole level just drilling every wall until I find something?
I hope not. That would be a bummer if that's what ends up happening. Yeah. But yeah, it definitely seems like it's going to get kind of unwieldy pretty quick. I think so far, like I said, I've gotten the lab coat. It's not gotten out of control yet, but I could totally see it getting out of control with the number of power-ups they're doling out and the size of the world.
Yeah. I also do really love the bosses in the game.
Yes.
And especially the one that is right before the lab coat. My friend and I were playing that together, and it was less of like a Metroid boss and more of a puzzle, which I really liked. So you know, it's this, and then also how the camera just pulls out of the sprite, yes. And it's like three times the view demagnified of what you're looking at, and you're like, oh god, I can barely even see my character.
I know, and then the boss itself, like if you just stand in one place, you won't get hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's definitely a really interesting puzzle because it creates that tension because you have to kind of expose yourself to a little bit of risk in order to actually hurt it.
Right.
But they definitely feel more methodical than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, that was a fun little boss. It took me a while to figure out where I actually had to shoot it once I killed all its parts.
Oh yeah, like, yeah.
What do I do now? I finally realized I gotta shoot its little mouthy mouth.
Yeah, ugh, its little starfish mouth.
That thing was awesome though.
Yeah,
definitely got some great art going.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, they do. It's got some really cool stuff in that game.
Yeah,
the mutation that you get is pretty rad too.
A mutation?
Yeah. That's a power up. It's really cool.
I'm waiting until I can get through. So I thought the little glitchy thing would make me go through the glitchy parts, but it doesn't let me do that.
Have you gotten a power up for your glitchy thing?
Don't think so.
Oh, your glitch gun?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's three lines of code that flash on the right side of the screen when you're using your glitch gun.
Oh my god. Are you telling me that that's going to start being in English?
I don't know. It's possible. But if you notice one, the top line is a solid line. It doesn't move very much. The next two lines do move a lot.
Okay.
You know, you'll get upgrades to lock some more of those in place so you can then have a more powerful glitch gun.
Fuck. Yeah, it looks like it looks like there's some crazy stuff that's going to go down, and I'm kind of excited about that. So, and it's holding my attention for sure. At first, I was like, "Where's the X factor?" But it's definitely materialized for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks that you're getting a little bit of Elliot Quest syndrome, where you just get stuck and you can't figure out what the hell to do.
Yeah,
I hope that doesn't happen to me, but we'll see.
Yep, I'm curious to see where you take it. Yeah, because I need some help.
Yeah, I could just, like, even using the lab coat, I'm like, well, I would not have thought of going through that thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm, like, wondering, like, oh, this is going to get pretty crazy.
Well, then I'm at a part now where I cannot traverse back to earlier stages, and I really want to because I'm like, oh, okay, I have this tool that I know will allow me to get into this thing, or I have, you know, this that I want to be able to try here, I remember that thing. Yeah.
So, yeah, you'll definitely have to press on, because whenever it traps you, it's about to give you an item that lets you get out.
Well, you would think that, right? But I don't know. I don't
Interesting.
Know. Yeah. Well, I think that's probably it, right, for Axiom Verge?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it's really fun. I'm having a good time with it. It just, yeah.
It also makes for a nice little divergence from Bloodborne for me, where I can, like, it's difficult, but the pace is a lot less, like, strenuous. Yeah.
If you need to, you can save yourself. You can farm for health and stuff. It's not, you know, you'll die, but you won't die repeatedly.
Right, and there's almost no penalty for it, so that's exactly. Great.
Yeah. I was really glad that when I died, the first or second time, like, it didn't erase my progression. Yep. I was like, oh, thank God they didn't do that.
Yeah.
Because they could have, you know, that would have been more Metroid, but they didn't, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, very smart. Welcome to the modern age.
Thank God, right?
Yeah. All right, let's press on with news that's been happening in the past 2 weeks, right?
Yeah. You got that first one on there, which is the big news. The PlayStation 4 Yukimura.
Yeah. As I like to call it, it's about damn time.
As I like to call it, Bloodborne, less stressifier. It's really nice. I was expecting to be like, whatever, I don't care.
So this is the patch on the PlayStation 4, which allows the suspend resume feature, which was announced along with the console.
Yeah, and I never cared, but then Bloodborne came out, and the loading was awful, and now I care.
Yep.
Yeah. It's really what it boils down to, because I love being able to turn on the console, launching Bloodborne, and I'm just standing there immediately.
Yep. Also, really, you can pause really Bloodborne, nice. Which is really nice.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true. But yeah, it's good. It gets the job done. I mean, have you been using like Spotify or whatever?
Hell no.
I heard that's available.
Yeah. It's also at the top of your queue if you haven't noticed it, which is really frustrating. That's probably the biggest thing. I'm sure you can move it, maybe. But the biggest thing that I find irritating about the patch is that they put the PlayStation Store on your media bar, and it's like, no, that's where my games go.
Are they ever gonna freaking fix that and make it like a normal thing, like a grid?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or like a folder based system.
Yeah, to give you the solution, so you're not having to. I don't. Yeah, the vestiges of the XMB.
It's just very silly. Have you messed around with the remapping at all? The button remapping?
I haven't, only because I have heard other people talking about it and that it's not going to do what you want it to do. So ideally you'd switch your X and O buttons or circle to make that how video games should be, or how the PlayStation should be played, where O is confirm and X is cancel. But then what that does is it makes that sweeping change across everything. So if you're playing, for example, a game that were to have QuickTime events and it says press circle and you pressed circle, you'd be pressing X.
That's what I figured, because those button prompts are not, they're not contextual. They're not based on polling the system. They're based on art.
Yep.
So it's the same thing that would happen with any game, really. And that's what I was worried about.
Yeah.
It's like you can't customize on a per game basis.
Right.
You can't.
What I wanted was not the button remapping, but I want confirm cancel remapping.
Just buy a Japanese one, you goddamn weeaboo. No, I'm just kidding. I had a hard time with that too initially, but I've very much gotten used to it now at this point, so I don't really care.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, you know, I've lived enough of my life, you know, in reality to not care about it. But I think it would
just
be really
like
cool.
Jamie and buy your Japanese PSP.
Yes, absolutely. The slickest blue. Other than that, I don't really have you noticed any of the there's a Vita update that also came out side by side. Is there anything notable that came with that?
60 frame per second remote play, which is pretty cool. I haven't actually tested 60 frames per second yet, but what I did do was change one setting on the Vita because NeoGAF told me to, and now my remote play doesn't suck.
Nice.
Did you see that thread? Did I send it to you guys?
I don't remember. Maybe. What was it?
Essentially, it's like you have to uncheck like always keep Wi-Fi on, which sounds good, but it's actually like always throttle Wi-Fi.
Oh, I've heard about that. Yes, I heard other people talking about it.
It's really funny. It's like the thing that sounds amazing is actually the thing that makes your chip run at like half power.
Yes, yeah. The verbiage on it is it would indicate that this is something that you want to have enabled, but then
it is not.
Yeah.
So now I can remote play again. I played a little Bloodborne doing that. It's kind of hard to do because you have to use the touchpads, but I can play again, so that's exciting.
I'll tell you, on the topic of the Vita, Axiom Verge does not translate well to it.
I want them to release the version that they are supposed to release. I was hoping to play that on Vita.
I was too, and that's why I played it on remote play, but it does not work like you want it to. Like, the lack of trigger buttons really, yeah, really shows strongly in this. And then the proximity of the right stick to the face buttons really gets in the way for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, more so than I thought it would.
That probably wouldn't bother me, but I definitely would be annoyed about the touchpad nonsense. Do you get stuff for L2 and L1 eventually? I'm assuming you do.
Well, you have the drill, right?
I have the drill and I have the disruptor gun.
Right.
But I just assume, given how frequently this game doles out power-ups, I'm assuming I'm going to get stuff for L2 and L1.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's sucky because you have to use the touchscreen to access your drill.
Can and you then remount that takes... the controls now?
I haven't tried that. It's possible that you could move it to the rear touch. But with the frequency that I use that drill, I don't know.
Yeah, the place you just want to check everything in that game, yeah.
Yep, or I'd like using it as a weapon.
As do I, yeah. It's a nice little weapon. But yeah, that's always been a thing with Vita, you know, if the devs actually bother to kind of make remote play work.
Yeah, hopefully when it gets released for the Vita, they'll make some... He will make some better design decisions that incorporate the Vita functionality.
And I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm sure I'll have finished it by then, though, which kind of sucks. I wish it would be day and date. You know, I hate to beggars can't be choosers when it comes to what is essentially a failing console, but I love my Vita. I play it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing La Mulana on there, actually.
Huh.
I actually got farther than I ever have.
Nice.
I don't know if you've ever played that game, but it's tricky. It's got some puzzles.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
All right. Should we move on beyond the PlayStation update?
Let's, yeah.
Just some quick bullet points, I guess. Broken Age, the second portion of that game, has been dated for the end of April, April 28th. So that's been what? How many years?
Is this a confirmed final part?
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm wondering. Are the proceeds from part two going to pay for part three?
Yeah, I have honestly forgot what I played that on before. I think Steam. So
it's funny because I think you could like only get it for PC, and then it just released for like every other platform if you didn't pre-order. It's like basically the message of this game is why ever do anything on Kickstarter.
Yep. I think that's just the message of Kickstarter at this point is
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Let some other schmuck take care of it. I'll just
exactly. Rewards. Yeah. I'm going to put more money towards Star Citizen.
Oh, topical.
Let's see here. I put this on here only cuz it was interesting. There was a mention by a company called Super Data that there would be a Resident Evil game coming out this fall 2015. No real other details. In the press release or whatever, in the quote that they had, it was like Resident Evil and like Batman or something. Like it was one game that was like, yes, this will be coming out later this year, and then Resident Evil. And you're like, well, are they talking about maybe a full package release of Revelations 2 or something?
I mean, it's Revelations 3, Episode 1.
Or are we going to finally... Will Capcom actually like make something happen at E3 this year and show off a new Resident Evil game?
Do they even make a 7? Are Japanese companies even capable of doing this kind of stuff anymore?
After 6, I would imagine I'm not... Not making, okay. Well, Capcom also has their Captivate thing, which usually happens in January. So I cannot see them surprise launching a Resident Evil game at E3 and then displaying it and then launching it at the end of this year. That seems crazy for them.
You know what though? I kind of hope they do because E3, man.
Yeah, we need it. Yeah.
Can I just say one other thing? That is some Super Data.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Steven Spielberg will be directing the Ready Player One movie.
Is that a lock?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I mean, I cannot think of a better choice on that. Like your E.T. and Super 8 dude.
Super 8 was J.J. Abrams.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Spielberg.
Nope.
No, it was channeling him, wasn't it? All right. Yeah. Well, anyway, Steelers still a great choice for Ready Player One because it's not somebody else who would be getting his name slapped onto a crappy video game-ish movie.
Produced by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Halo Nightfall 3.
Adam Sandler's Pixels.
Oh, God. We look so bad.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Why do they have the... Is that really the father of Pac-Man? I hope not. Really hope not.
Let's see here. Jeff, do you want to take away the Nintendo-based stuff?
Sure.
Actually, do you mind? I'm going to butt in here.
Yeah,
one more
do
thing.
Halo.
Let's get Halo 5 out of the way. It's been dated to come out October 27th this year. There was a live-action trailer that came out alongside of, I want to say, the Music Awards or something that happened recently, or maybe it was like the Walking Dead season finale that it came out alongside
of. Did they just drag out Mad World for another
No, but it's the same theme where it's like, oh, it's Master Chief in a dire situation, and yeah, it's I don't know, and then it switches, so it's the other guy in a dire situation, which the exact same thing is happening. So
do people like these live action trailers? Is this like a Microsoft hallmark now? Like, they could probably stop and nobody would care, right?
I think that Halo fans appreciate them the most because of, like,
they tell them a lot about the gameplay.
Well, Forward Unto Dawn was a pretty okay thing, and I think people want to see that Master Chief as a real human. I don't know. I can appreciate what they're doing with that. I think it's very cool. I understand it being like, you know, they're trotting out the same horse that's already been out again.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, you know, oh, well, I haven't shown us any gameplay, but actually, like, if you pay attention, you can find plenty of Halo gameplay. So it's really not that egregious. It's just odd that they would spend the money on it. But, it must offer returns, because otherwise I don't think they would do it.
That, and, you know, I'd rather have a live action gameplay teaser that has absolutely nothing, like, that you're not going to extract bullshit details out of, opposed to like the 2013 E3 trailer, which is like, oh, it's Halo Zoids, where Master Chief is wearing a cape. Why is Master Chief wearing a cape?
That's my favorite Halo trailer of all time.
Yeah, where it's like, you're going to extract so many
Halo,
details from
that
it.
Game.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not. So why not have something that's very much not?
But they played some Halo music, so it's Halo. That's your hallmark for Halo right there, that music.
Yeah, it is. Da, 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 da. It's good music. Da, da,
da, da. Yeah, it's some good music.
All right.
Okay.
Why don't you talk about something that you're actually like, and I'll make fun of it.
No, I was going to say, Microsoft pretty much wins this year by having an actual game for the holidays.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Microsoft is not really my wheelhouse, but, you know, props to them for actually delivering.
Well, we'll see.
I guess so. I mean, there's still, you know, there's still plenty of time for delays, but...
That and, you know, what with Master Chief Collection being so broken at launch, who knows, you know, what to even expect out of Microsoft Studios at this point. And what's it? What was it? Quantum Break was delayed to 2016.
Yeah,
the most interesting game for the Xbox One.
Yeah, that's very unfortunate. But, you know, they join a whole other crop of games that have been delayed. In addition to, I'll just go on to it, Zelda is not coming in 2015 anymore, which I don't think is really a surprise, you know?
Not one bit.
It's just hilarious because the last time Zelda was mentioned in any capacity by Nintendo was that really contrived, gross conversation between Miyamoto and Aonuma, where he's like, so Zelda's really coming this year? And he was like, yeah, for sure. And then they're like, Zelda's not only not coming this year, but it's not going to be an E3, so it's probably not coming for a while. Which is kind of maybe a good thing, because I didn't like the way that game looked. I know that's maybe controversial, but it looked really empty.
I did not believe that was a real game when that was being shown.
Yeah, I mean, it looked alpha, you know? It looked weak.
It looked like animated concept art. And I had zero faith in that thing actually coming out as displayed.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely being played. There's no doubt in my mind that what was on the screen was being played by Aonuma. But yeah, it was not... I mean, you know, wipe away all the crazy fanboy nonsense, and that was just Link in a world, mm-hmm. a big empty world,
yeah.
riding a horse. You know, a horse that went around trees. So great, they've got the tech in place.
Yep.
So yeah, it's not a surprise. It sucks though, because you know, we can go through this direct, and we don't need to spend forever on it because we already getting up in the time here. But
yeah,
what do they have for the fall? It's the Sony problem again. What do you have?
Yeah. So the Nintendo Direct happened, and they showed off a lot of little cool things. Yep. But
did you enjoy the 200cc announcement?
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
I thought it was funny. I was laughing.
Yeah.
Because only Nintendo would be like, all right, guys, you've played 50. You've played 100. You played 150, but are you ready for 200?
Oh, my mind.
And they spent like 5 minutes on it.
Yeah.
It's so stupidly adorably Nintendo.
Yeah. The one thing that I did love about that trailer was they kept showing this one scene over and over again, which is like one of the levels where you go up with the hang glider and you go through an archway. But this time you went over the archway, and they showed that thing like 3 times. I'm like, okay, I get it. You go over the archway. It's faster. Jesus Christ.
Here's the thing about Nintendo though. I'm going to play that and I'm going to actually give it some serious consideration. This is what I've been conditioned to do.
Yeah.
It's like Nintendo announces their bullshit dog food nonsense that they're going to give me, and then I like actually interact with it in a serious way.
Yeah,
I don't know how they pull it off.
Hey, man, you and those live-action Halo trailer fans are one and the same.
Like, I haven't, like, really studied the footage, you know, check the tape or whatever, but I'm going to play it, and I'll have a good time with it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It's free, too, so that's great.
Yeah, it is. But, yeah, do you want to just kind of run through the list on this direct?
Yeah, let's knock them out here quickly.
All right, let's knock them out. So, hey, this is at the front, so we'll talk about them. Amiibo stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Still putting out Amiibos. Amiibo.
Yeah. I locked down the one Robin and Lucina Amiibo that exist. I've actually pre-ordered them from GameStop. It took me 1 hour of waiting. I arrived at 3. I ordered them at 4. Fuck all Amiibo things.
Yeah, the unholiest of unholy unions. Nintendo stock and having to be at a GameStop.
Yeah. that's a whole other kettle of fish. But yeah, ordering Amiibo still is just the worst ever, and you can read about that on the internet. But they announced some really adorable ones. Yoshi is super cute. I don't see that being insanely limited, but you never know.
Yarn Yoshi, that will be the only one that I do go bonkers. Like, I will go to Jeff levels of insanity to get my hands on a Yarn Yoshi.
Yeah, I don't need all three, but I'll probably grab one. They're pretty adorable. God,
I know. They look so... I would pay up to $35 for one.
Holy shit, that's more than I paid for any Amiibo.
That's not really saying much, Jeff, since you own all of them, so...
That's true.
I'm willing to go in 3 times the price of a regular Amiibo.
This is how deep I am. I'm like, well, I'm not crazy. I haven't spent over retail on any of the 30-something Amiibo that I own.
That young other... one, though, it looks so good. Like, it's exactly when they had that trailer out a year ago, and they had the cute little Yarn Yoshi, and I was like, oh yeah, man, I want that as a as an Amiibo. And then lo and behold, they heard me.
Well, it's just Nintendo being adorably whimsical. It's like, you know what? We don't have to make Amiibos out of plastic. Here is an adorable, like, woolly one.
Well, yeah, but this also lends credence to, like, I really hope that they do continue to make Amiibo for other than your kind of obvious choices that are more for just like the collectible side of things. And
I think they're in deep now. This is how they're going to make Nintendo profits this year, basically.
Yeah.
Without a system that sells well, you know, might as well just go hard on merchandising.
Yeah.
And it's working, honestly.
Selling more than Wii U.
Yeah, seriously. I think they must have surpassed Wii U sales by now in total Amiibo sales, because they were at 5 million as of January.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other interesting announcement, though, was Amiibo cards, which have been hinted at for a while. And I think a lot of people thought, like, oh, you know, you'll get your Marth card. But, you know, Nintendo is not going to be what you expect.
I took your Marth card.
Everyone remembers their first Marth. Anyway, Nintendo was never going to be quite what you expect them to be, and they announced a game built around Animal Crossing cards.
I wouldn't say built around it, but definitely incorporating them in an interesting way.
It seemed to be, I don't know, I got the impression from what I saw that it was going to be an amiibo or an Animal Crossing card game.
But you don't need the cards. The cards simply supplement what is already there in more impactful ways than just buying or like giving you an item.
Are you sure though?
Yeah, because you're getting requests from different people, and then you can scan in the card, which then gives you a new character to give you a request.
But see, that's what I think the game is. I think that's the whole game. This is what I took away from this. Okay. I think this is going to be a free-to-play game.
Yeah.
With amiibo cards. Only. That'll be the monetization.
Hmm, okay.
They have notice they said nothing about what kind of package you can expect here. They didn't describe a retail package.
Yeah.
All they showed was just remodeling homes. And I suspect, and I could be wrong, I suspect this is their free-to-play amiibo game.
I was expecting like a online download, like a $10 buy-in sort of a thing, sub $10 buy-in, and you basically have your Animal Crossing house, like the Sims house maker, where you can design your house, and then you have guests that come over and they say, "Hey, make me a house that looks like this." But then if you get an occasional one or two of those at the base level, and then if you want more, then you buy the cards and you go that route. But in essence, it's a house designing game, which isn't a game anyway. So if you're adding more houses to design, you're just continuing to not play a game, right?
I mean, I think you're being a little bit dismissive of people's tastes. I think it's a broader, it's a game designed to appeal to a different kind of audience than perhaps what we would like. But, you know, I mean, Style Savvy is a game where you just dress up, and I think that's a good game, I will say. Like, you know, Jessica bought it, and I played it, and it's pretty fun. So, you know, I wouldn't knock it, but I'm curious to see if this will be their free-to-play game. That's my Nintendo wizard, you know, prophet prediction that this is free-to-play.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how they'll handle the card distribution. Some people have talked about blind packs, which is really... I don't know how I feel about that. But, you know, we don't know.
I got a Sable.
I know, right? So it's interesting, and I've kind of noticed a lot of like little monetization bits creeping in.
Yeah.
I think this
was more off turning to you than it was for me. I don't really care.
I guess whenever they talk about Puzzle and Dragons for a lengthy period, although that was not, you can't actually monetize that, right? It's like $30 for the whole game, isn't it?
That's a good question. Yeah, it does seem like it, but I can't see. I honestly cannot see how you can play Puzzle and Dragons and not be offered monies to expedite that thing.
I don't know.
Like there has to be a way to provide people with more of the tokens, like beyond just the regular doling out. Like there has to be. Maybe Street Pass is involved somehow, or the maybe coins, like the play coins. What are they called?
Play coins, that's what they're called.
Okay, yeah, though maybe that might be your currency.
Maybe we'll have to see. It'll be interesting. But let's touch on something that did kind of turn you off, which is the Fire Emblem game.
Oh God. Okay.
You weren't feeling that, and I'm actually not upset about it at all. But you kind of feel you're a little bit slighted by it.
I think Fire Emblem it's very interesting territory for Nintendo to plant a stake in. So Fire Emblem, it was shown off before, just this Fire Emblem, no title. The Japanese title now is Fire Emblem IF, or maybe it's even longer than that, hashtags.
Fire Emblem the fanfiction.
Yeah. So they showed this off, and what it is you have two kind of distinct storylines, one of you're playing a character apart with like a noble family steeped in culture and tradition, and then you have, you know, your other side, which is like you're playing on the side of like the invading mongrels who are passionate about upward mobility and at the cost of or through combat, like you have your nobility and then you have your warring mongrel essentially.
Well, it's not really, like they were presenting it as like peace versus eternal war. Like, one side is like very glory focused, and another side is like very like meek and kind of like, let's keep the peace, let's everyone work together.
Oh, okay. I did not take it that way. I took it more of like the, like you have like the rigidity of society, and then you have like the chaotic craziness of like a less structured environment, like a rebellion versus an empire sort of a thing.
Yeah. Well, either way, they were saying that like the it's white and black basically. Yeah. The white side is going to be like the easy side, and the black side is going to be like kind of non-traditional, like a little bit different than your typical Fire Emblem game, and harder too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's a branching storyline, so you play a certain part, and then you essentially are asked like, well, where do you side? Do you side with this the white or the black side? And in the American Nintendo Direct, they didn't really go beyond that, and that's pretty much where we were left. As you said, they said one will be easy, one will be harder, and that's pretty much it, right?
Pretty much, that's all they said. Yeah.
So
they said, you know, 2016. You know, but that was it. That was all we heard about releasing.
So then in the Japanese Direct, we were they were forthright with a lot more details, and that what has caused sparked this kind of controversy in my mind, and that is Fire Emblem Black and White or whatever, game A, game B.
that seems appropriate. Pokemon Black and White.
Each side will be a separate SKU. It'll be a different. You'll have to purchase a physical game cartridge for one and a physical game cartridge for the other.
Well. You could, although that's the least cost effective way to do it.
Yeah.
So it was like you could buy the physical game cart for 47, you know, 100 yen or whatever. And then if you wanted to, so what you, like you said, at a certain point, chapter 6, you make a decision and then you're locked in.
Yeah.
Or if you buy the game cartridge, the choice is made for you because you just buy whichever side you want.
Right.
And then afterwards you can pay like 1800 yen to buy the other branch, and you were grossed out by that, right?
Not necessarily. No.
Okay, because you initially were like, eh.
No. The thing that weirds me out is what happens with the digital side of things.
Well, the digital side, you don't like how you choose and they're locked.
You know, I think that if you buy the one game, like I can get behind the Pokemon side of things where and. I have to like temper my own disgust at a moment because what they have said is it is two essentially different games that are fully fleshed out. So to charge
chapter 6 in by Fire Emblem terms is like you just finished the tutorial.
Yeah. But they have gone out of the way of saying like these are different. So it's not different in a Pokemon sense, which is like different, you know, characters or whatever. But if they're significantly different departures in the storytelling department and characters and even mechanically, that could be really interesting and totally validating having two different SKUs.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think what my point was to an American audience, and especially with, you know, Western video game journalism, this will get harangued so hard if they have this product on the disc already.
And okay, so you think just the fact that the content exists but you can't get to it will disgust people?
Yes. And now if you're getting the disc or you're buying the cartridge and then you're paying for the expansion or the next game and that's like a download or something like that, I can see that being somewhat forgiven. And then there's the third chapter DLC, which you can purchase as well, correct? Only in DLC.
I think so, yeah. I think that's kind of interesting, actually. It really reminds me a lot of... the two Zelda games that concurrently released.
Yeah. Oracle of Ages and something of Seasons, right?
And people weren't too miffed about that. People weren't like, I'll put them on one cart, god damn it. But maybe just the fact that they occupy the same kind of space will upset people.
Yeah.
I could see reviewers kind of like thinking about Oracle and like kind of reflecting on that. But I guess I could see them going your way too.
Right. Well, I mean, in the salivating, hungry for controversy kind of video game space that currently exists, like I do not see how there's a winning side for Nintendo to take in this in American market. And that is what I think is most interesting is the digital version, which you can download in Japan for essentially the same price, right? Probably a little cheaper. It allows you to make the decision at chapter 6 to go either white or black, and then it locks you into that choice. Now, the question is, What if you delete your game off your device and you re-download it? Is there some sort of figment still in the hardware that says this will always be this version? Or is there a way to circumvent that? And if that is the case, that it does do some locking down, like, that is some really, really weird shit for Nintendo to be getting into.
It is, and it's kind of strange because they've always said that their DLC will be kind of, like, separate, like, you'll have to download it. That was something that when they brought out DLC, they were like, that's what we're going to do. Like, yeah. We're not going to charge you for something that we haven't, that we've already created.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing to remember is that people always put all of Nintendo under the same umbrella, but this is Intelligent Systems, and that's a different, you know, they're second party. They're not, they're not internal Nintendo headquarters. They're kind of their own thing.
Yeah.
That's one thing to think about. But also, I don't know. I mean, it's odd, and it's odd also that if you buy the physical release, they're separate. You know what I mean? Like, it's just weird. And I don't know what they're going to do. You've raised a really interesting point about deleting off the device. I hadn't really thought of that, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it's weird. We'll see what people think. I think it'll just be a bullet point. I think people are so used to getting strange crap from Nintendo that they probably won't even care. But maybe they will.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I just think it's a very weird thing that could potentially happen. And I'm interested, as you pointed out, they haven't made any announcement for the Western market. So how will that be handled?
Yeah, and hey, think of it this way. I mean, if we really are getting two Fire Emblem games, sweet.
Yeah, totally cool.
We will see how that plays out. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, speaking of DLC, Nintendo characters, they've dated Mewtwo, right?
They did date Mewtwo, and they made quite a surprising announcement of Lucas, which they had previously kind of said, like, we're probably not going to, like, you know, we didn't want to put him in. Like, he wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, well, fan demand was so overwhelming that we decided to put him in. And that this weird for a number of reasons. Number one, like, when has Nintendo ever said anything about responding to fans?
Exactly. The only counter to that have they made a statement.
Yeah, they've only been like, we don't give a shit what our fans want. Mm-hmm. Like an actual, like, public PR statement. Like, we don't give a shit about our fans.
Yeah, what's a product waterfall? Project Waterfall.
So that was interesting. And also, I just feel like they've been teasing. They've been doing like a long tease for Mother 3 for like five years.
Yeah.
And they did it again when they announced Lucas. They were like, from this game in Japan, Mother 3, you know, people really wanted it. And I'm like, so are you going to bring the game over? Or?
Oh, I hope so.
They gave him like a full trailer. They showed off shit that only people who'd played the fan mod would know, like his snake, the rope snake.
Uh-huh. Or the table, like, that he walked in on.
I don't even remember the table. I'm trying to think, what would that be in the game? I'll have to watch it again. Okay. I was only half paying attention then, but I just saw the rope snake, and I'm like, nobody except people who've played Mother 3 are going to know about this rope snake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's going to happen. I'm ready.
Oh, yeah, I am too. You've built it up a lot. I want to play that more so than I've wanted to play Earthbound.
Yeah, so. I think it's a better game. And, you know, it's really great. It's definitely it needs to be experienced by a broader audience. So yeah. I'm very hopeful.
And on top of that, they're now enabling a Smash Brothers ballot, so you can submit a character from a Nintendo game, give a little explanation why online. It seems really cool. I'm really excited about that, which we have engaged with.
We've already submitted our Waluigi, Advance Wars Tank, and Dingle Votes.
Yep. Yeah. The trifecta.
Did I ever send you that amazing picture of Waluigi where it's like, it's from Mario Golf and it's like, you got a hole or something? It's so no, good.
That's great. There's a lot of, you know, you're seeing a lot of stuff online popping up about that, like a lot of Bayonetta love, which, you know, that's great. That makes sense. That's your Snake from Metal Gear choice.
Yeah. Although there's been some kind of rumbling that it's probably just going to be Nintendo stuff, which kind of makes sense. Because,
definitely.
You know, that's going to be a lot cheaper in terms of licensing and stuff.
For sure. Keep moving on here. There were some Street Pass additions, new little mini games, a fishing one, and a zombie one.
That zombie one actually looked kind of fun, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I heard that you get a weapon based on your hobby.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. So if your hobby is cooking, then you get like a knife and fork or something.
It looks like it's just like the whole point of the Street Pass games has been basically to parody genres, and it just looks so whimsical in its parody. Like, only Nintendo would make like the most adorable zombie game.
Yeah. That I will never be able to play since I don't street pass enough.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not gonna buy it, unfortunately. But it looked really fun. So that's there. Mm-hmm. 64 and DS games on virtual console. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, the more the merrier. Since I've modded my Wii side, like when I want to play classic games, I just boot up my Wii U and I can play Super Nintendo games, I can play Nintendo games, I can play all manner of things. And the more the merrier in terms of backwards compatibility, and the more stuff that I can actually play on the Wii U side and buy on the Wii U side, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really enjoy buying games for Wii U that I can play on the tablet.
Yeah.
So
legal options to play old Nintendo games. That's a great option. That's out
there. Yes. I'm very for it. Like I would much prefer having legal options to play all this stuff, so I'm happy about it.
Yeah.
They showed off the Fire Emblem, the Shin Megami Tensei crossover, which I wasn't as I wanted it to be more Fire Emblem, but it looked very Atlas.
Oh yeah, it looks so good.
I was like, Griffin's gonna love this.
Oh, it looks so Persona. Like it has that, or like Devil Summoner Saga, I think is the, yeah, that's right.
I was like, is Nintendo allowed to have women this booby?
did you see the Fire Emblem game?
That's true, but man, Fire Emblem used to be different.
So this Shin Megami Tensei Fire Emblem crossover, whatever it is. I think it has a crazy, crazy subtitle name with including a hashtag, which means sharp. Yeah. Sharp.
I think it's like Illusory Revelations or something.
Yeah. It's awful. But it looks so good.
It looks like a very. I mean, it definitely fills a hole in the Wii U lineup, like a straight up like JRPG.
Yeah.
Like it looks very much just like core JRPG experience right there.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we hear people like the Persona games. We're never going to get one of those, but you can have this.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. I mean, you know, I probably won't like it because I haven't liked the other ones, but, mm-hmm. It's nice that it exists. And, hey, people thought that thing was done and dead, so.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Cool. Yep.
Pretty cool.
Oh, well, you know, you'll just have to wait for the Fire Emblem Cross Shin Megami Tensei game.
Oh, you mean the actual one? That this thing isn't actually described as one?
No, I'm saying that this is the Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem.
Oh, I see what you're
saying. If you want it to be more Fire Emblem-y, you'll have to wait for the Fire Emblem process.
Yeah, it's coming in just a few years.
Yeah, as soon as the Tekken Cross Street Fighter comes out.
Yeah, exactly. No, I follow what you're saying now. but yeah, that's cool. I was also really excited to see Fatal Frame. I think that, I mean, the game itself, I don't know, but it's cool that that's getting, that's a series that's gotten a lot of love over the years and hasn't gotten a lot of localization love, so.
Sure.
It's cool that they're bringing one over. I don't know if this is a solid entry or not. It looked a little hokey sometimes, but hey, that's pretty cool.
Yep, sure is. More games, always better.
Getting what they want, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the last little bit, and I just put Mario Maker as the big fall title because that's what they led with, but I'm excited about that game. I want to play it.
Why not?
But it's not. It's not enough to sell a console in the fall, and that's the big problem.
Not by any means.
Was Woolly World coming this year? Did they say that? Did they put a date on that? I think they said fall.
Remember.
I think they said fall. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they showed that off quite a bit, which I definitely glossed over because I was more interested in the amiibo. But it looked more like a classic, like Yoshi's Island 1 sort of experience, which I just don't give a shit about.
What?
I don't know.
What?
I don't.
That game is amazing.
Sure. I'm sure it's great. I just don't like it.
I don't actually think it looks as... It doesn't look like it's going to measure up to original Yoshi's Island, but they claim that it's going to be, on par. It's going to have a comparable difficulty, which is relevant because the game that it's based off, Kirby's Epic Yarn, was not a hard game. Mm-hmm. Although I love that game.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then there's also the easy mode, the mellow mode.
Yeah.
Very
it's
much
a nice balance,
in the
can switch it any time, which I like.
Touch fuzzy, get dizzy kind of mentality, where Yoshi is like flying and baked out of his brain.
I have no problem with games allowing me to make them easy anytime. People who get upset about that are just silly.
No, it seems fine. I don't have an interest in that kind of a game.
Fair enough. I mean, the Wii U is absolutely saturated with platformers anyway, so it's not like
That's pretty much it for news. And stuff we've been playing. So,
Anything else noteworthy out there in the world that we should discuss, or we've covered all the big stuff?
I think we're good, and we're at a good stopping point with our time. So until the next fortnight.
When Dragon Age, or not Dragon Age, Broken Age. There's so many, they reuse these words so much.
Yeah.
My God.
Demon Age.
Stop it. Stop it, games.
Better titles, you jerks.
Can't you just use anti-disestablishmentarianism once?
yeah, they did. I think that's part of the Shin Megami Tensei Fire Emblem game.
SMTX Final Fantasy would be the most ridiculous batshit nonsense in the world.
Yeah,
let's make it happen.
Yes, please. Once Square finally goes under, and Atlas rises to overtake all.
Frankly, that I look, I love Square, but I don't love Square of today. That company, I'd be okay if that company died.
Yep.
Don't care anymore.
Nope, neither do I. Although I'd like to see 15 before that happens. But
sure, why not? That'll be the game that bankrupts them.
Hopefully, one can dream.
Anywho,
So that's been it. Thanks for listening. I've been Griffin Hoffman.
I've been James Scherer, but now I'm Jeff. Wait, no,
change, transform.
I hit the button and then I turn into another one. I'm a trick.
All right, Griffin. Tricky later.
All right, see ya.